Welcome to Esoteric Modulation, episode 003, Quad in LA and the Evening Hopefuls. Esoteric Modulation is your fortnightly podcast that covers all the wild and wonderful world of modular, exciting and unusual instruments, and we take a look into interesting sound and visual art projects too. I'm your host, Ed Ball.
And I'm your co-host, Ben Wilson. And in this episode, we're going to focus on a very interesting esoteric instrument, the Harkon Continuum. Art project is Suzanne Ciani, and specifically her quadraphonic performance in LA. We've got some listener questions touching on the quad debate as well. We put out an Instagram post asking about questions on quad, some interesting things to bring up there. Our featured Bandcamp artist is Heimbach, and we round it all up with some events that are coming up this year too.
Yeah, so we'll sort of keep it fresh as we go in along. Anyway, what have you been up to, Ben?
Videos.
There's a shocker,
which is
right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm back off of doing Superboo videos and onto videos at home. So it's the same thing, but different headspace. Been playing around with some of the Grisalizer modules again from Future Sound Systems. I demoed a couple of those a while back. I'm diving into the other two that I didn't. That's a really nice kind of gnarly little family of modules.
I like the look of those, yeah.
I also put up the video for the generator. Really nice hands-on sequencer from Analog Solutions. And by the time people hear this, I'm sure there'll be some more videos up this week as well.
Yeah, well, that brings me around to the news roundup, Ben, because I did see the video that you put up about the generator. And again, just to let people know, our news roundup isn't going to be the latest and greatest that's happening this very minute. It's just what's in our ether at the moment, what we're finding interesting. So yeah, Ben, I did see your generator video and that sparked my interest because I use that myself and I love it for the performative aspect of it, but I really feel that I need a good quantizer with it. So I'd sort of like to ask you a question regarding the quantization. A, what obviously you were using on your video, but B, really what you feel would be a good quantizer for that piece of equipment. I've been looking at the IntelliGel scales for a couple of reasons. I like it that it's not just a quantizer. It's got a little sort of SH101 style step sequencer in there, but I quite like it that you can bring two CV inputs into it. And it'll output both of those in a melodic scale that are related to each other. And I thought that would be really good to have on. But then what would you suggest would A, be a good quantizer for that piece of equipment? And B, what would be a good quantizer for me?
It's a tricky one. I mean, we should say the generator, if people aren't aware, from Analog Solutions, is your classic kind of analog step sequencer. Plenty of CV in and out in terms of syncing and things like that. There is a chromatic quantizer on the voltage generator side, which is a kind of, I mean, it's not like a surge TKB or a mate noise pressure points, but a pressure, I'm not sure if it's capacitance technology, but a pressure led sequencer, just a little six step, a little bit like the sequencer on the easels as well. It's that and three rows of kind of 16 steps or less if you play around, analog voltages. So to get musical scales, yeah, you'll need a quantizer, but it sparks way more questions than answers, unfortunately. Yeah. The one I used was the ADAC System 207 Intuitive Quantizer is its name. And that's great because it's four channels, four jacks per channel, which is your voltage input, which could be one of the rows from generator or anything else. A trigger input, which makes it function like a sample and hold. So if you had a row going on the generator and you didn't want to use the gate that derived, or you did want to use a more sparse gate pattern, you can trigger the quantizer so it will only like snap to a new note when it receives a trigger.
Right.
Now that's important on the generator where it isn't a 16th note. If we just imagine a clock, just a 16th note clock ticking around the sequence, but the generator's got a great gate generator, rhythm generator on board. That isn't just the steady clock pattern. So if you have a sparser gate pattern and that, say, fires on step one, but then steps two, three, and four have different pitch values or different voltage values, but they don't have a gate. If your envelopes are long enough, kind of dum, you know, nice note rings out, you're going to hear the pitch change in the background, even though the envelope's only being kind of struck at the beginning.
Yes.
So at that point, you really need a trigger in on your quantizer to tell it, here's a new note, here's a new note, here's a new note, here's a new note, in some kind of rhythmic, tied, synchronized fashion.
Yes.
So that pulls up one thing, and then there's the output on the ADAC, of course, but then there's also a trigger output. So if we had lots of voltages or steps that are all just, say, turned off, and then a flurry of different notes right at the end of the pattern, you could generate your own triggers and gates that way, where you get one at the start and then nothing because the voltage isn't changing, and then another little gate pattern. So you could use it as a rhythm sequencer in that sense as well. So for a really fully fledged comprehensive quantizer, I'd want a trigger in and out as well.
Right.
The scales from IntelliGel does have a trigger in, does have a trigger out, and it will do either its internal sequence and an external voltage or two voltages. It looks like there's a lot of intelligent ways of working where you could have not just two different voltages coming in as two different pitch sources, but one that transposes some of the scale values. Well, they both outputs work from that one input.
Yeah, that's what I liked about that.
I mean, the more outputs you've got, the more voices you need. There is free rolls on the generator. I did a nice kind of free voice, poly, paraphonic, variophonic, if you want to get into Mark Doherty's new ways of discussing the musical
polyphony.
Polyphony and the actual articulation of that polyphony. He's got a great graphic on that, actually, that we can't show you on an audio podcast, but we can maybe link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
But that needed three channels. But then, of course, that needs at least three oscillators. If you want to articulate those separately, that's another three, lots of whatever's downstream, filters, VCAs, envelopes, whatever else.
Yeah.
I think a dual one's good because it's going to give you options for making harmony.
Yeah.
And basic chord tones, just duophonic chord tones. I think the scales, I think you found the right one. There's a great quote I've just saw on the IntelliGel website that says, your modular system is all about generating complex, fluid and dynamic variations in voltage. It's a glorious thing until that sousaphonist joins the band and demands you play notes conforming to an actual musical scale. Those damn sousaphonists. I don't know a single sousaphonist. I know lots of other musicians. They don't want to play in a scale too. So damn musicians, we should say. But I think that it looks great, scales. It looks like it would do a lot of what you'd want.
Yeah.
I mean, for anyone else curious about it, they're the things I'd think about. I'd probably load up modular grid, search by function, quantizer, and how many channels do I need? Do I need it to trigger a certain way? If you do have a quantizer that doesn't have a trigger in, you can run the voltage through a sample and hold first.
Right.
So that you could have every fourth note triggers the sample and hold module.
Yeah.
So it's only letting every fourth note change before it hits the quantizer. That would be a simple way of doing it. And doing that pre-quantizer rather than post would be more accurate, generally.
The ornament and crime, it was the next thing I was looking at because I believe you can quantize four channels with that. A, it looks like there's a bit of menu diving. I know you could set it and forget it. But, you know, if I wanted to quantize all three channels, that gives me the ability to do that. The one thing I did come back to the scales with was because it's got that little keyboard on there as well. And the other thing that Ornament and Crime does is you can build your own scales and, well, put a pattern of your own notes in there and restrict it to that, which I really like. That's what I really like, the idea of those two sort of quantizers.
Yeah, it's the Ornament and Crime. Yeah, you could just have it as a quantizer and forget about all the other modes it does. And it's, you know, they're it's a DIY project, but people do build them and they're priced well. And they would be worth the space and the price as a quad quantizer, definitely. In terms of getting scales in, I think you have to program a text file before it goes in. I've not done it. There's that many scales in there, you probably wouldn't have to be honest.
Need to anyway, yeah.
With a keyboard interface, though, which of course doesn't speak to everyone, and it's a vertical keyboard, so it's a bit weird anyway, on the scales or like the ADAC's the same, it does let you jam and perform and be creative with your note choices. So I love... We were talking about scales before we came on air and we just really basic C major thing we were running through. So we'll stick with C major.
Yep.
Just having the same sequence on the generator or any other piece of kit and just starting the piece with only the note C active. And then maybe you put C and G in. So you've got your root and fifth. And if the voltage is high enough, it will go up in octaves as well. And then maybe you put the F in or the A or the D or the E until you build up to the full range of notes in that scale. And then maybe halfway through, you know, two fingers above the device, you pull a couple of notes out and it's going to shift what that sequence is doing and how it feels without actually changing the sequence. A really nice thing I like to do with that is start with the root note, so let's just say C, because that's where we've been, building all the notes, and then take C out entirely. And it feels like the whole thing's transposed, even though you've just given, you've just pulled a note out that's not available. Yeah. We should say, because this caught me out for a long time with quantizers. I remember putting, I don't know, C, D, and E turned on my quantizer. And I'm thinking, it's not playing a C, D, and an E. This is weird. And then I'm thinking, how does it know what I'm plugging into, like what my oscillator's doing? And of course it doesn't. The quantizer's none the wiser. There unfortunately isn't really a standard to say that, you know, 0 volts is C or it's A or it's whatever. So it's really based on what your oscillators are tuned to. Much like a guitar, the thing that really made it resonate for me and made me understand it was, if you imagine holding fret one on a standard tuned low E string on a guitar, that would be an F. That's just what it is. Yeah. If you down tune that guitar, or you tune to an open voicing where it's not tuned to E anymore, fret one is no longer F. So it's all relative. You know, you touch another stringed instrument, you pick up a soprano, ukulele is not tuned like a guitar. So that fret one on that lowest string isn't an F. So it's remembering that it's in my
tune
head.
Tune your oscillator.
Yeah. Simply tune the oscillator. Yeah. And there's loads of free iPad apps and phone apps and everything else for that. But also just thinking in intervals, you know, and even if you're not musically inclined, look at those keyboard interfaces are great for thinking of the space between the notes. If this one's active and the top one's active, that's quite a wide jump in interval. If I turn the bottom three on, they're quite close. So the sequence is going to feel like it's much tighter and in a more kind of compressed musical space.
It's great advice for people that are just coming into modular, isn't it, that? Because it's that sort of thing that you know, when you're early into modular, a light switches on, you go, oh, okay, right, I should have really known that. But it's the type of thing that, it's like you was talking the other day about the attenuation of the signal going into the quantizer, then sort of narrow the range of it down. And I just thought, oh, really? You have to do that. Okay. That, again, is just a little golden nugget, because you'll whack it into there and you'll just go like, why can a dog nearly hear it one? And then why is it blowing my speakers out at the other end, you know?
Yeah, so that's absolutely key as well. I mean, you don't have to do it, but 1 volt is an octave of musical information. It's a standard within Eurorack and other formats. If a knob from 0 volts all the way counterclockwise to fully open gives you 8 volts, it's like jumping from the low to the high key on a grand piano. It's just not how most musical patterns function or instruments tend to be played. Now, do it. Break the rules. It's modular. I'm not trying to enforce any rules. But I find it way more rewarding, certainly with analog sequences where I want to be turning knobs and sliding faders and moving in between and visually being able to see what every kind of step is on and where the knobs are. Just putting it into an attenuator. So I would turn all the steps up, or hold a single step and just turn that up full, put that into a simple attenuator. There's loads of little passive ones that go in line on cables as well, and just drop it until I got to a range that worked for me. And that's usually about 2 octaves generally. Yeah. But what that means then is, from fully off to fully open on that knob, fully counterclockwise to clockwise, I can play the whole range of that knob turn. If I've got a full 8 volts on a knob and no attenuation anywhere, and I only want to work within an octave or two, I can barely turn the knob up and I'm making huge changes in pitch. So those attenuators are a massive part of it as well for me.
Is there any quantizers that have any attenuation in to help with that, or have an internal thing that you can select and go, right, I just want this to be, you know, 2 octave, 3 octave range? Do you know of any out there?
It's more of a, well, say more of, it's a little bit big if it's just a single channel quantizer, but the Instro Harmonic, which is a great quad caudal voice generator.
Yeah.
It's only one input. So it's not a quad quantizer. It takes 1 voltage in and gives 4 relevant musical voltages out. And there's lots of modulation over its behavior and everything else. That does have an attenuator on its input. Right. And it's got an offset. So if you want to narrow down the range, but then lift that up or lower it down, you can do that. And it's on a little slider that you can turn on and off. So you can almost jam with that as well.
Ooh,
sequence
nice,
go in,
isn't it?
Turn on the slider, you just bump your sequence. you know, like all those classic kind of synthwave sounds. It's the same sequence, 30 seconds in, it just bumps up. It's like the boy bands getting off the chair at the end of the song, where they all come up a tone at the end. You can do all that kind of thing playing around. So that does
it. That's interesting.
But not many. It's not a common...
It's interesting that is, isn't it? I just thought in a musicality sense, it would make real good sense to put attenuation on the sort of way into a quantizer.
It definitely changes people's behavior. You know, I know people, we're going a little bit off topic, so I'll be quick, but people say, oh, I love it when filters have, or any module, they've got an attenuator on every single CV input. Well, then, you know, companies get feedback saying, oh, the module's way too big. I didn't need all of those attenuators. Do it in half the size. Yeah. So you kind of can't win. But passive attenuation, it's so easily kind of fed anyway. The RYO air attenuators, the mutant modular passive attenuator, Coma do a little inline one as well. Yeah. You just do some in a cable and just forget it's there. That's how I tend to do it. Just kind of one cable to the sequencer, into the little passive thing, set it where I want, plug the other cable in and just forget about it.
Well, I loved that video, Ben. It was great. And like all your videos, you get in between the cracks of the pavement, I call it. And you start doing things to it that it probably wasn't made for.
I always try and delve into things. You know, it's a product that's been out a little while. It wasn't like a day one hype video or anything. No. I really wanted to dive into it and find myself in it kind of musically. Where does it sit? What can I really get out of it? And try and present that to people. That's always my idea.
We should do a show on sequencers one of the day, because again, that's another thing that I'm looking into. You know, I think that the generator is great for performance, but there's lots of different flavors, isn't there, a sequencer? And I'm still trying to get my head round what my perfect combination will be. So I think to do a show on mainly on sequencers one of the days would be fantastic to do.
Yeah, it'd be great. We should try and find some guests. One really kind of tangerine, dreamy, analog step sequence kind of vibe, and someone else that's like electron way, not presetting their system, but saving digital information and recalling that live. I know Paul and Nino are going out and playing their album Telegraph live. A video coming soon with them about that.
That's interesting.
Which is, how do you then go and perform an album of modular music live?
Yeah.
They've gone through the struggle, so let's just ask them.
Can I imagine? I mean, that's a great shortcut. That's the best thing, isn't it?
They'll tell us.
That brings us around to our esoteric equipment section, Ben. And this week it's the Continuum. And I've been trying to think over the last few days how I can describe this to people, because it's quite hard. And I've seen a few videos on the Continuum as well, you know, how people try and describe it. And I think the best way I can describe it is that it is very much like a piece of equipment that you would learn in the acoustic realm. And I think this is because of a couple of things. First of all, they've got the plane surface spot on. And a bit of history about this, Leopold Haken designed the surface and the original instrument. And I believe he did that to control Kima at the time. And then Edmund Egan came along and started messing around with that and came up with a sound engine for it, which is the Egan Matrix. But it's been an amalgamation of these people slowly evolving this instrument. And I think slowly is the operative word here, because when you play that system, you get the feel that it is an instrument. And I don't think that happens overnight. And I know it doesn't, because I've seen talks where Leopold has talked about how many times he used different thicknesses, different weights of bars, different types of bars, different neoprenes to eventually get the best surface. And it really shows, because I tell people it's like you're pushing the electrons. And I mean, that might sound a bit corny, but like you are pressing down on a string or bowing a string or plucking a string, you really feel you've got a direct connection with those electrons or that electronic sound. And it's a beautiful, beautiful experience that I connected with straight away. First of all, I'd seen the Continuum around for quite a while and thought, oh, that, you know, that does look interesting. But I had my first play with it at Superbooth 2 years ago, and I sat down and started playing it and just got addicted to it straight away. I just connected with it and it was beautiful, and it was like the first time I sat in front of a piano. I'm not a great piano player, by the way, but the upside of all this is the sound is very, very good. And for me, for production of soundscapes and unusual sounds, it's very, very good too. And the ability to move those gesturally around are excellent. But the control it has is that wherever you are within the plane surface, which is just one big plane surface, you can capture that within the synthesis engine and attribute that to an action or a sound or an effect. So it gives you a massive, massive range to play within. So I've got a basic sound here at the moment, and it's called Echo Star. And I thought maybe the best way for me to explain the feeling of playing this is to use this particular sound and just run you through what's happening with that particular sound. You've got this sort of belly type sound that if you strike harder will give you a very different feel. So you know, that's one facet of this one sound set. But then you can just push your finger through that bell sound into the next layer underneath. If I just slowly push through that layer, you get a little bit of that bell sound, but then it will morph into more of a sound that you can... So you then can play this almost mid-layer. So I'm keeping this constant pressure on because I know this is the mid-layer here. And I can play that without that sort of metallic bell sound coming into play. And then as you push down harder, we're pushing down harder here, we start then picking up more of another metallic-y type of sound, which is in a separate layer underneath. Now, if I bring my finger up fast from that, you can hear that jangling as I've brought the finger up with speed. But if I push down into this again and we get to this, that's the sort of third layer, if you like, underneath, I can actually bring it up slowly and just hear some of the different tonalities of that twinkling. But then if I bring it up quick, it will use that as a different call to do something very different. So you've got these, and it's a beautiful way that you press through these. It feels beautiful. And as you're pressing through, you can almost feel where those sounds are, if that makes sense. And that's a bit weird saying that, but you can feel where that sounds are. So all of a sudden, in one sound, you've got many ways to play that one sound, you know, which I sit down at this and I'll lose myself for hours just because there's many possibilities within that one sound. You know, you're not switching through sounds to get different feelings. You can express your feelings through just one of the sounds because it's got very many layers, and those very many layers very easily controlled, because obviously at the end of the day your finger's the envelope. There's no real envelopes on this at all. You are using pressure and your playing ability to be the envelope. So you just got this beautiful way of you can get different tonalities.
An interesting thing I think I'm hearing, and I remember Cuckoo at the Tolman Symphreactor event telling me this, that some of the different patches have almost like rounding or averaging of the yes. pitch position. And that varies. Yeah. If it's a very percussive patch that may be played very fast, it's yeah. almost like it's pre-quantized, like it's going to snap to a kind of normal standard pitch. And then others yeah. seem very free and open and kind of average and round off into almost like safe in tune areas. How easy is it to get, like, you know, you're playing a couple of fingers then getting chord tones out. Is it yeah. fairly easy to play,
well,
you know, polyphonically, multiple fingers in tune?
This is where the Continuum really shines, I think, because a lot of people and the Continuum community are very much about, we're going to buy this instrument and it's going to take us, like a cello, it's going to take us many years to be able to perform it.
Yeah.
And they've designed certain patches, like violin cello patches, that give you that. And there is no snapping to grid on that. And I find it okay. If I want to do a very complex chord, it does then get hard. And that's where you really have to practice. It's an instrument that will give you back the more you practice. That's without a doubt.
Yeah, I could see that in the Continuum Mini straight away as well. I mean, I've had less than an hour on it. And if you'd say, oh, how are you finding it to play? I'm terrible at
yeah,
it.
It's hard,
but
isn't it?
Because I like those string patches and models of fretless instruments. I mean, they could snap to grid, but it's effectively more like a guitar neck than a cello neck then if there's frets on the thing and snap to grid in play. I like that I can see that I could get better and it's only going to get more rewarding the amount of practice that's put into something. I mean, time, effort, intention, energy, they're all the things that we should be channeling at our instruments anyway. So something that really begs to be practiced and learnt and made me feel stupid again, you know, but without any kind of ego, I'm fairly competent on a few instruments. That's been my career up to this point with modular, and it made me feel terrible in terms of, well, not terrible, it made me feel bad, but my playing was terrible, comparable to something that I know, and I loved it. I loved feeling almost vulnerable again, like, oh God, I'm rubbish at this. But the interface and certain the sounds as well were enough to really make me want to learn it.
Yeah, let's take the sort of violin-y, cello-y type of thing. It doesn't take too long just to love the ability that, you know, you're not snapping to any grids. I've just got a quick patch on here. Hang on there a second. As soon as you start bringing more chord-based stuff in, you know, that's when things start.
Well, there were moments there, I'm not getting into judging the playing, but there were moments that were like really in tune, like Western intonation, and there were some moments that went a little bit out, but more in an Eastern flavour in terms of looking at microtones and different tunings.
Yeah.
And the ability to, well, to not be intonated, to not have to choose a standard intonation and just work freely. I think just really warrants playing. Right away, the first two notes, I was just like, yeah, there we go.
Yeah, it's just...
It sounds enough to grab you, I think.
It is. It's lovely. And, I mean, you can do... They've got a lovely CS80 on here as well that I like. And, of course, because it is a giant ribbon, you can sort of do that CS80 type of, you know, a ribbon effect on it. But, I mean, again, for subtractive synthesis, it's... That's a couple of notes. I find that... My technique's not brilliant on it yet, but I find I get into it and I just get lost in it. Within an hour, I'm really finding the expression just outweighs the problem of getting your notes in line. Because as you know, that sometimes that just little off really makes it, that little sort of key that's just out, you know, fattens up that sound.
Well, standard intonation doesn't lend itself to being the most in tune. Anyway, there's a great video of an instrument. Again, this is one for the show notes. I'll have to go away and find the link. And it looks like a series of Lego keys. And the guy plays a C, E, and G, a C major chord. And he's like, can you hear that there's an instability in there? Despite being a major chord that we would think as very resonant, very rich, major, nice, harmonious chord. And I think, I can't remember if he makes it flat or sharp. One or the other. I don't mind being wrong. Let's say he makes it flat. And just brings the third round. And it just sits super harmoniously. And that's the experience I get with modular when I'm just tuning oscillators. Because by ear, it's just tuned to the interval that resonates with what I want to do.
Yeah.
And that might mean that I'm a few cents off and I'm a bit sharp in places or the tracking's off on the oscillator, but it doesn't really matter for what I want to do. There's loads of synths that don't track well.
Yeah.
So if you can play like a bad vintage synth, that's also fun.
Yeah, and I mean, with this thing, it can go from acoustic. People aren't et up about playing this perfectly, you know, your perfect technique, almost like a cello player is, and there's that big discussion that goes on in the Haken groups. For me, it's more about sound design. I love the sound design, although the frequency on these things is sometimes fast. I think it's on some of the patches, it does lend itself to have some compression on there just to keep it in line a bit, because it can get really out of control sometimes. But I think for sound design, you know, it's wonderful. They've got some great sound design sounds in there. I'm guessing when you become quite good at the sound engine, you could delve into that and build some really interesting stuff as well. But there's one called the Creaker. It's just a simple... You add a little bit of reverb onto that, and all of a sudden you've got this... So for sound design as well, and just for me, I'm trying to build soundscapes and build walls of sound. I mean, we've only scratched the surface. I think we'll leave this open to listener questions. If they do want to know any more about the continuum, or for me to delve into a certain part of it, because otherwise I'm going to be here hours talking about it. But it's a great instrument.
Yeah, and I think remembering that even though the sound is vast, much like a case of modular, it's potentially doing everything. Percussion, drones, sound effects, there's reverb on there, there's big wide stereo sound. Just, you could still just treat it like an instrument. You know, an electric guitar would go at least through an amp in most cases, if not some kind of modeling or whatever. Pedals, modular, loopers, samplers, granular samplers, making sample packs out of this stuff. It gets even more exciting. The idea of such a wide-ranging instrument, but still just treating it sometimes, not all the time, because it can be the finished, polished thing, but just treating it as, here's something I'm going to feed a series of effects or granular processes. I remember seeing Eamon Tobin just before iSAM came out, I believe, with a sample of, it was like a rocking, old wooden rocking chair creaking. And he's playing that up and down the keyboard, and that's absolutely fascinating. And then you hear the way that he's put that into his music. It really did open my mind about the continuum.
Yeah, I think it's a truly amazing instrument. I would just say people to, try and locate one and get in front of it. You'll find out whether it's for you or not. But certainly I sort of, I'm basing it as part of my performance case. I've built a case basically that is half of it, or two thirds of it is Eurorack. And then if you like, the one third is the continuum. Just because I'm sort of basing my Eurorack setup around the sort of sound set of the continuum, and having more of a tape and effects analogy to the Eurorack system with looping and affecting that sound with effects. That's sort of, I think, the road I'm going down with my Eurorack. So the continuum is part of that.
Yeah, you touched on a nice thing for another future show about you building your Eurorack system as a processor, as a kind of vehicle to be fed by the continuum. I think building systems, not just Eurorack, it could be a pedal board, but building systems to process, capture and manipulate sound, that's just as interesting to me as a system that is the sound source itself in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I do want some voices in there, and I'm yet to decide what those are, but I do know that I want lots of tape analogy, the recording, manipulation, and then the effects part of that. I'm using a Ditto looper at the moment, which you suggested to me because it's got that decay function on it, and I've just fell in love with that process, the ability and the freedom of looping sounds and building up sound walls with that. I find is a very freeing and lovely gestural thing to do.
That really nicely leads us into our art project segment, which is Susan Ciani's quad performance. Well, she always performs in quad. Quad performance is almost negligible when you mention Susan Ciani in terms of the title. But the Los Angeles Public Library performance.
Yeah, I think this is really interesting for a couple of reasons. Obviously, in the last episode, we got into the quad debate with Kyle, you know, because quad is so synonymous with the, you know, the Buchla setup. But also because then in the weeks between that, I listened to Tim at PodMod, and he's done a chat with Suzanne Sharney, which is very, it's just a very lovely, here's a tape on the table, let's sit down, have drinks and have a chat. And I don't know whether you've got to have a listen too much of that, Ben, but it was a lovely way to find out what Suzanne is really like as a person, I think.
Oh, it's really lovely. It's really warming, just really lovely person that she is, and that comes across so well. It's Tim and also Ellison from Waveform Magazine.
Yeah.
As you say, it's almost like they've put their recorder down on the table. She's got them drinks. I think she had some homemade cheese at one point. You know, and there's windy audio. But it's very like fly on the wall. They went to see her.
Yeah.
They talk about things. They share some ideas. She plays them some sound inside on the Buchla. They sat outside discussing some historical things and so on. And just a really lovely, warm podcast that just shows the person that she is, and all the time and energy that she gave them as well when they went to see her.
Amazing. And it sort of just sparked my interest back into the quad and that. And I mean, I have watched loads of stuff by Suzanne, because who wouldn't, you know, if we're into this type of stuff, Suzanne's going to be a fairly prominent person that you're going to research, really. But it just took me back to her Los Angeles Public Library performance in 2018, around the release time of her quad album Live. I chose it because she is an artist. I mean, obviously, she's just a very creative person in a lot of spheres. The performance was a lovely performance. The visuals were lovely visuals. And you sort of get to see, I think, Suzanne at her best in front of a Buchla, just going with the vibe of that Buchla and shifting it around. And you know, all of a sudden, this electronic instrument is very organic, and it seems to be an instrument. And I think that comes over within the video. And then at the end of it, Ben, you get her sitting down just talking about her history with Buchla and quad, and going all through her history as a music producer as well, which we'll link to. I just think it's a great video to watch for our art section.
Oh, it's an absolute must watch for fans of electronic sound design, people curious about surround, art in general, creative expression. It's an absolute must watch. There's a great kind of quote at the start where they talk about, you know, and she always gets asked this, does it always have to be in quad? Did you always work in quad? And she says that, you know, she had a sheltered upbringing in terms of Buchla, because Don Buchla's setup was quad. That's what it was. And she started working with them, and the system's designed to handle it, and that's it. And she talks about having her first agent doing her booking one of her first gigs, and she gets there and they're talking about needing speakers at the back of the room, and they say, no, we can't do that. Like any of us would get going into a venue now, you know, I need another set of speakers flown up at the back of the room. And she says, well, I'm not performing them. This is what I'm doing. And it's always been quad. This great. I mean, it's not an easy thing to do. I was thinking about this earlier, and you know, Pink Floyd did some stuff in quad, and other people did as well. It's just one of those things that didn't happen. You know, at one point, sound was mono. Well, it wasn't. We've always had two ears, but audio was mono primarily, and it went stereo. It could have gone quad. I was thinking about this the other day from when we first kind of shared links and we're talking about this.
Yeah.
It could have happened. It could have been a thing, couldn't it? That just, that is what we accept. Unfortunately, it didn't.
Well, I remember, Ben, me going into this room with my dad, and they did a quad performance in there. Blew me away. And that's why throughout probably these shows and that, I am going to come back to do more on multi-speaker performances, because when you're sitting in the middle of this quad performance, it is like nothing else.
Oh, it's unreal. I mean, if anyone can get to any kind of quad or surround in any way performance, it's really, really a nice thing. And just spatializing sound, moving around sound, having different experiences depending on where you are, and kind of trying to tailor the music for how you might think someone might move through a space. It's really kind of creatively liberating to play around with space in a different way, because we've got stereo, we've got left to right. We think about kind of stereo image in audio. We've got this free idea of 3D audio and depth and space, and sounds that want to seem further away are duller and darker and a little bit lower in volume, and the really bright sounds like someone's next to your ear. You know, you can bring a whisper right up as if someone's next to your ear, or you can make it sound like they're whispering in the distance. But to be able to do that times two, because you've got two speakers for quad or more, really is a nice thing. I think people, even if you can't get a quad system, people should just experiment with more than two speakers. It's a really interesting thing to try. I mean, it wouldn't be quad if you just, you know, put a guitar amp at the back of the room and your studio monitors at the other side. But just this idea of, what does it sound like if all your reverbs are kind of patched off back to a guitar amp at the back of the room, but your studio monitors are dry? It's an experience, and it might lead to something that would inform your work or pushing surround or not. But I think it's something people should try. At least try and experience.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've been banding the topic around the last couple of days on the run-up to this, and your friend brought up an artist that I think we might have a deeper look into maybe as the show goes on, and that was Francisco Lopez. Again, we will link to the information on his website here, but that was interesting, Ben, wasn't it? The way he configured it and had the seating arrangements.
Yeah, it was. Just to kind of shout out listener questions and comments, it was Jesse, whose Instagram page is Not Tumbling. Again, we'll link to this in the description. He makes some really great patches on a range of gear. And he mentioned the seating arrangement, that you're all sat around a central point but facing back out to the walls of the room, and you were blindfolded. And he did preface that with saying, look, that sounds really cheesy and corny, but it was genuinely a fascinating experience.
Yeah.
And you can see it. It's well worth just heading to our show notes and checking out the link. Just these people sat blindfolded looking back out from a central space. Looks like a really fascinating project.
It does. And although I didn't have too much time to go into Francisco really deeply, I did notice that he's got a Red Bull Academy lecture, which we'll put in the show notes as well, Madrid 2011. I started listening to that. He's an actual biologist, believe it or not. He sounds a really interesting guy. So we'll put a link to that. And as I say, maybe going forward, we might talk about him more in the Arch Project segment that we do. But talking about listener questions and staying on that, we had one on Instagram from Ossidigi, I think it is. I hope it is.
Ossidigi.
Ossidigi, yeah, that's it. Yeah, we hope. And he had a couple of questions. And he said, do you find quad processors essentially front load left and right and use the left-right rears for fill-in, a bit like Dolby, or do they run on separate channels? So I think the answer to that is that quad is very different to Dolby surround sound. That's another topic in its own right that might go into in later shows. But traditional quad is the same amount of amplification, same sort of speaker arrays, four different channels, and you're moving it around with some kind of mixer. It's got to be decently set up to make sure you don't get horrible phasing sort of situations. So I think a proper quad setup has to be taken seriously, doesn't it, in performance terms?
Yeah, it's not some kind of encoded like Dolby space at all. It's four separate lines. I mean, the most basic way someone could do quad is to buy another pair of the studio monitors that they may have and try and place them on, you know, similar speaker stands, similar distances from the listening position. It's not ideal, but four pairs of the same active studio monitors would work. There's things like the Azimuth Coordinator, that was the device that was built for Pink Floyd, I think by an engineer at EMI and Abbey Road at the time, it was two joysticks that would pan around a quad space. But I've done it with basic analog mixers where there's four auxiliary outs, and AUX 1 is one speaker, 2 is the other, 3 is the other, 4 is the other, and blending amounts to different speakers. But yeah, it's four separate independent lines to do quadraphonic.
Yeah, which sort of answers the second part of the question that he was saying, do we need to have, you know, the same speakers on the rear as the front? And I think, again, the answer is, if you want to be a purist, yes, but like, you're a great one, Ben, for just trying things out. It's not pure proper quad maybe, but, you know, just try these things out, put different speakers on, try different arrays and that type of thing.
We haven't got time to get into the kind of technical side of how to implement panning that. Mixing into a quad space isn't too bad, because like I said, if you've got four auxiliary outs in modular, a really quick way, it's cumbersome and it takes up a lot of space. But if you had, you know, four VCAs or just four places to output sound and four mixers that fed those. So if you wanted to mix four sounds in a quadraphonic space, you'd need four four-channel mixers so you could split your sound into all of those mixers and blend them accordingly into the four speakers, out into powered speakers or amps or whatever it is you're using. But actually panning around that is quite tricky. If people are interested, there's a great video from Lou Pop, as well as his interview with Susan Ciani, on kind of four easy ways to get started with surround sound. It's quite funny watching a stereo YouTube video on surround sound, but it's a great video from Lou Pop. You know, there's some modular, there's some software, there's some kind of doorless hardware stuff in VCV rack that any of us could go build for free if we were curious.
Yeah.
So that's a good way as well. Just check that out.
Yeah, I would say we haven't got time to delve deep into this again. You know, if people want that in future episodes, we can. But those two videos, especially the Quadraphonic Masterclass that he did with Susan Ciani, because it goes into things like how to move your sound around, the do's and don'ts of that, and then how to get depth with your reverbs and the different ways you have to treat reverbs within that environment. So I think if you're looking to get into quad and you want a bit of technical know-how behind those, I think those two videos are a great place to start.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which brings us on to our featured Bandcamp artist of the show. I've picked this one, Ben, because it's an album that I love and I keep coming back to by Heimbach. He's got quite a few albums on Bandcamp, but it's one that I particularly love. And I think it's because it's one that hasn't got beat and rhythm in it, really. It's got lovely array of deep immersive sounds that cajole and move around with each other, and that's one of the reasons I do like it. And in his show notes, he actually said that he wouldn't have been able to do this album a few years ago because he liked a little bit of beat and bass in there. But he was, I believe, writing a piece for an orchestra at the time. And in between rehearsal practices, he started putting these pieces together. And it was that that sort of inspired him to do this album. And I just think it's lovely, expressive album. I know I said that I brought this album up and you said, oh, I haven't heard that for a while. I can't wait to re-listen to that again.
Yeah, we should say the album is The Evening Hopefuls.
It'd be a good idea for me to actually have said that, wouldn't it?
We got so into it, we nearly didn't tell them what it was.
Yeah, I know.
I've had it on in the background when I've done bits of admin and other things. It's just been this great, nice texture. I always like having sound on. I don't like sitting in silence. But when you want to just put headphones on and give it your full attention, it really rewards it. And it rewards repeat listen as well. A really great album that I think is just drenched in Coco Qantas. Yeah, tape, warble, hiss, drifting tones. It sounds like samples maybe from a radio somewhere. There's the track Hungarian Waltz. So that, I don't know if that's radio or... But it's a great album with, you know, splashings of synths, splashings of acoustic sound, samples, noise. Yeah, just a really nice listen. And really nice as well that, like our news section, you've picked an album from a year or two ago, not this is this new release that came out this week.
Yeah.
There's tons of fascinating stuff on Bandcamp that, you know, people send me a link and I go back and find and listen to again and stuff I forgot that I had, or it's great.
Well, yeah, I mean, I absolutely love it. And you did mention the piece of equipment that we think has featured in it quite heavily, which is the Coco Qantas. And again, that's another reason why I love this album, because I do love and I'm very interested in the Coco Qantas. And it has got the feel of the Coco Qantas type of vibe going on with it. That sort of real low bit rate, but almost sort of creamy type of sample playback.
Yeah, it's weird because you drop the bitrate on stuff and you get that high-end alias in sound.
Yeah.
But this is like warm and lo-fi digital. It's weird to talk about downsampling that way. It's strange. Like, noise is noise to some people, but it's almost warm noise.
Mm.
It's got this nice kind of blanket over the whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, I love what he does. I love his videos. I love his music. I love the way he moves forward artistically and creatively. Again, for me, he links all what esoteric modulation is about, using unusual equipment. He's, you know, as much an artist, I believe, as a musician. You know, we'd love to get him on and have a chat, and I'd love to talk to him about that part of his practice. I love this album for just sitting down, put my headphones on and just listening it and just being enveloped in this warm, tape-hissy type of environment. And I will say, to bring to this, he's been quite a influence in my music playing going forward, because I love the way in a lot of his work that he's working in a small part of a sound, or just slightly shifting sounds around. You know, he's not going from one extreme to the other, or big drops, or, you know, all of a sudden big different sounds come in to draw people in. He's just shifting slightly, playing with the tonalities of sound, and just that finite thing of doing that brings this amazing sort of electricity to the part, yet he's not making big massive gestures. And I've been trying to do that in my practice. I've been trying to, because, you know, when you start, you're sort of like, oh, okay, a big bass there, and I'll have that warm, I'll have that cold, and, you know, you're sort of bringing all this stuff in. And I've just found the beauty lately of putting a couple of sounds from the continuum into the ditto looper, half speeding it, reversing it, just as a warm little blanket underneath, and then just caressing the sounds and moving those sounds around. And there's something very magical in that process. So I'd have to give a thanks for Stefan for sort of leading me down that road, which I think is a lovely creative road.
Yeah, and it's really hard to do. I remember
I can't do it very well. That's no, the point.
I don't mean us all trying to sound like a Heimbach release, no. But just to have this, a piece of music where it will take you on a journey across, say, 5 minutes. But if you were to skip through it, you know, load it up in whatever audio player, skip through where it sounds the same at every single point in the piece. And there's not just Heimbach's work, but there's some really gorgeous wide classes ambient pieces that do that. It's a real journey with your eyes shut in headphones. Yeah. Yet if you're trying to demo it to a friend, oh, check this out, and you're skipping forward 60 seconds and it still kind of sounds the same, it's really hard to get across. And it's hard to really strike that balance a lot of the time. And it's done really beautifully on this release.
It is. I love it. I would suggest everybody go over to Bandcamp. Again, I'll put the album in the show notes. And just sit back, relax with a cuppa or wherever you want, and, you know, let it wash over you. I think it's a very joyous journey, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. And as that takes us through all our different kind of segments for the show, there's a few things we'd like to mention not to miss out on. Luigi's Modular. Been talking to the guy behind Luigi. Really nice, and nice to see the Colorado scene coming together. They've got their first Colorado Modular Synth Society event. There's a free all-day festival in Belmar, Colorado on July the 27th. It's a few weeks away. And the next two off the top of my head, I'm not entirely sure on dates, but second to last weekend in July is the Brighton Modular Meet. We'll put links to all these in the show notes again. And Deer Shed Festival the weekend after. Sam, Look Mum No Computer, Alex, Milo Melodies, Sir Bleep himself, and me and I will be at Deer Shed Festival in the science tent. We're all performing in various guises across the different tents and things that happen at Deer Shed Festival. But we're all in the science tent for the 3 days of the festival, just letting people play on synths, gear, jamming, making music. We'll probably all sync up clocks and have a bit of techno for a while as well. It's really great fun to see people of all ages making music. There's one kid last year, just to give him a little shout out. I'm going to get his name this year if he's there again. He has been the last 2 years. Just an absolute techno warrior. This little boy that must have been about 8 years old. And he came back every single day, and it was kind of like his brother and sister and his mum were trying to, like, you know, come on, we're going to get lunch or whatever. And he's like, dad can't stay. And his dad, you know, turned to us and said, do you mind me just going and grabbing a coffee and I'll come back? And he's there with Alex, Melody, just kind of having it large with some techno on his modular. Nice. But just great, really musical in his approach to when he was bringing things in. And for me as well, I love the act of trying to design a system that is going to be interactive and speak to people. That's got enough in there for those that know kind of what this stuff is, but it's inviting enough for children.
Yeah, that gives them a nice parameter and a playing field to just go in and enjoy within.
Yeah, exactly. And then the big one for us that really nicely links back to our arts project as well this time is Modular Meets Leeds. And we're looking at having a properly composed quadraphonic piece on one of the days, which is August 17th and August 18th this year. I can't confirm what it is because we're not 100% on it, but we'd really love to do it if we can this time.
That'd be fantastic. I will be there for that, that's for sure. That brings us on to the end of the show. And I'd like to give a couple of shout outs to our Seattle connections out there. We mentioned Tim's podcast earlier, PodMod. Have a listen to that. It's got some great content on, and definitely have a listen to the Suzanne Charney interview. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, there's also Ellison, who we've also mentioned, that went with Tim to see Suzanne from waveformmagazine.com, a free hardware magazine about synths.
Yeah, brilliant. And of course, last episode we had Carl Swisher on. Source of Uncertainty is podcast on Buchla is coming out, I believe, this month. We should have notification soon that it will be out. Ben, I'm really looking forward to this because for me, I'm really interested in looking or getting into Buchla this year. I've had a bit of a love affair with the easel for 3 years. Not haven't had one, but just
you've been wanting one.
Yeah. Well, the story is, before I got my first piece of gear, the Vostok, I started looking at the easel and just the things about creating sound with colour and having this bi-directional thing of being art-based. It really struck a chord with me. Really want to dig down the Buchla sort of road a bit more this year. So I'm looking forward to definitely listening to Carl's podcast.
Yeah, me too. And it was nice this year. And again, we spoke about this on the previous show for people that may have missed it. And we all picked some different pieces of gear from Superbooth, and Kyle brought up a Metro Modular, who had some pieces of gear for Buchla format. We were discussing earlier that 4U isn't a format like 3U Eurorack is. Eurorack is this wide open Frankenstein system, whereas Buchla and Surge, that are 4U technically in height, they are different kind of paradigms. I'm really into this idea of other people developing for it, and hope it brings more people in and I can somehow tag along, and I'd love some Buchla this year.
Yeah, it'd be great to see you get your hands on some Buchla and, you know, just experience what that is all about, really.
Yeah, just, it's a bit of a busman's holiday, isn't it? Going from video in one format of Sims all week to wanting to play on another. But yeah, no, I'd absolutely love to. I lent more towards Surge and have some Surge at the minute and a little bit more to come. And I have a lot to learn in that format as well. But there's a lot of parallels in all of these. I feel like I'd somewhat hit the ground running. It wouldn't be starting from nowhere. So I feel like they're instruments and pieces of gear that I could get a lot out of and have a different experience with, which creatively and musically should push me in different directions. It's always nice.
Yeah, I always think that it's got a flavour of sound, the Buchla has. You can always tell that sort of Buchla-ish sound. And it's a sound that I really love. It's a tonality that I've really loved listening to over the years. So yeah, it'd be really interesting to see what Carl comes up with and what he's talking about on his show. Well, that wraps the show up. Esoteric Modulation is a show we do fortnightly, so remember to subscribe on your favourite podcasting platform. And we'd be grateful if you could rate and review us if you're on there too. If you'd like to listen to the podcast and get some more in-depth show notes, then head over to our website, www.esotericmodulation.com. And we've also got a monthly newsletter there that you can subscribe to.
And in this particular show, certainly I've mentioned this will be in the show notes lots of times. We'll listen back and try to get everything in. But if there's anything we miss, anything we link, talk about that wasn't clear, do leave us a question or a comment on either Instagram or Facebook, or get in touch through the website. We can update those show notes and point you to anything that we've discussed, and maybe hold some stuff back for future episodes as well.
Yeah, well, Ben, thanks a lot for that.
Yeah, it's great to just kind of rattle through things. And we've got a really special guest for next week. All guests are special. It's always lovely to have friends with us, but a rarity and a real gem in kind of modern electronic instrument design, I think, for next episode.
Yeah, I'm super excited for this, Ben. He's a person that I find intriguing, both art and electronic instrument wise. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. So thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, see you next time.